Today is Monday, January 21st, and I'm Gordon Caddick.
And I'm Claire Eagle. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It is 5:05, and today's News 101 will be bringing you our final two debates with candidates from the 2013 AMS elections. Our first will be among the three candidates for VP Academic and University Affairs. That's Montana, Hunter, Ann Kessler, and Kieran Mahal, followed by a debate between the four candidates for VP Administration, Barnabas Caron, Justin Fernandez, Derek Moore, and Olivia Young.
But to begin with, we will be starting with international news from Free Speech Radio News, followed by our local week's weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club, and then an episode of Hardball with Iqbal, Dodgeball Edition, in which we'll be discussing student engagement and student politics here on our UBC campus. But now to Free Speech Radio News for international headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. At least 37 foreign hostages from eight different countries are dead in the wake of a takeover of a plant in a remote Algerian gas field. The country's prime minister stated 29 militants allegedly linked to Al-Qaeda were also killed. The standoff began last Wednesday and ended over the weekend when military forces raided the facility. It is unclear if the hostages died at the hands of their captors or as a result of the military action. An anti-government insurgency by persons described as Islamist militants continues in northern Mali. French forces carried out airstrikes in at least one city over the weekend. Discontent with the central government has long been a reality in the northern areas, where grievances predate many of the so-called Islamist uprisings in other parts of Africa. Amira Woods, co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus, told the Real News Network that the current crisis is a direct result of international intervention in Libya.
In the midst of this ongoing conflict for self-determination and greater rights of the North, you enter these weapons, the heavy flow of weapons from Libya, and it's just been a recipe for disaster.
The current government of Mali came to power through a coup. Last month, the United Nations approved a resolution to permit intervention by an African-led force. Former colonial power France sent troops on January 11th without UN approval. In India, the trial of men accused of a deadly gang rape began in so-called fast-track court today. Their prosecution begins as another case has emerged in the state of Punjab. Sharia Niasi has more from Bhopal.
The trial of five men accused of the December 16th rape of a medical student in New Delhi began today behind closed doors in a fast-track court formed for crimes against women. The 23-year-old woman died days later from internal injuries suffered during the attack. Today's court proceedings occurred behind closed doors despite a petition from defense lawyers to open the trial to the media and the public. The trial has been adjourned until Thursday when the judge will hear opening arguments. Despite the public outcry, another brutal rape case has emerged. A young woman on her way to a job interview in the state of Punjab was allegedly pulled into a car, taken to a remote area and raped repeatedly over the course of 2 days. The victim says the perpetrators recorded the assaults on the cell phones. According to the police complaint, the victim says she was thrown out of the car after the assault. She is now receiving treatment in a regional hospital. Shurenya Z. FSRN, Bhopal.
A group of mothers whose daughters disappeared from Ciudad Juarez arrived today in the capital of Chihuahua to demand that the governor help them find their missing relatives, dead or alive. Andalusia Noll reports from Mexico City.
Participants in the Walk for Life and Justice for Women trekked for 6 days on foot in freezing temperatures to bring their demands to the doorstep of Chihuahua Governor Cesar Duarte. They want access to forensic evidence and case files in the Ciudad Juarez morgue, where the remains of more than 130 individuals rest unidentified and unclaimed. The families also want rapid responses from the authorities when women go missing. The caravan participants brought along a coffin containing two bones, which authorities say are the physical remains of one of the participants' daughters. Families who have received bones say a cloud of doubt lingers over the closed cases due to unclear forensic evidence linking the remains to the missing persons. The caravan followed the same path from Ciudad Juarez to Chihuahua City, taken by Marisela Escobedo, an activist who was shot dead just over 2 years ago in front of the state government palace while demanding the arrest of the confessed killer of her teenage daughter. Andalu Janol, FSRN, Mexico City.
And finally, friends, colleagues, and admirers of internet activist and developer Aaron Swartz gathered for a memorial service Saturday in New York City. Among the speakers was David Eisenberg of Freedom to Connect.
Aaron wanted to talk about the big fights, the fights to make the world a better place. And I'm afraid that Aaron's legacy is going to be dumbed down to hacker, copy fighter, the way the media dumbed down the SOPA fight to Google versus the telephone companies.
Swartz committed suicide January 11th. His relatives and close friends have blamed what they describe as an overzealous government prosecution of charges stemming from the unauthorized downloading of academic papers as the major factor contributing to his suicide. And those are some of today's headlines. I'm Shannon Young.
Thank you to Free Speech Radio News for those headlines. More international headlines and their full newscast can be found at their website, fsrn.org. We now go to our weatherman, Phil Chang, who's going to be bringing us our week's weather forecast and a bit of explanation for all the fog that we've been having.
Thank you, Claire. So, good evening, listeners. Yes, heavy fog these past 2 days in Vancouver, and today is no different. It is now well into the evening, but yet we are still surrounded by a little bit of fog. Right now, the fog with us thin is called advection fog, and that's fog formed by moist air getting blown over a cold surface. That stays with us throughout the day. Mornings, however, those crazy moments when you just wake up and everything is white, those are the results of having advection fog, as well as another type of fog called radiation fog, which is caused by the air cooling overnight and condensing in the morning. So that's particularly serious with when surface temperatures are really low, like today, when the morning surface temperature is near 0 degrees. Take extra caution when driving. Now, other weather phenomenons to look out for. Starting Wednesday, we're seeing a dynamic low system moving in, which is likely to bring large amounts of rain. For example, 16 millimeters on Wednesday night. Looking further into the future, preliminary, but some of the US models are predicting that system is going to stay with us well into the weekend. So, yes, maybe it's time to start to bring your umbrellas with you again. Now for Environment Canada's official weather forecast. Tonight, fog, low of -2. Tuesday, increasing cloudiness, fog dissipating in the morning, high of 7. Tuesday night, cloudy, a few showers beginning after midnight and becoming windy before morning, low of +3. Wednesday, rain, high of 6. Thursday, periods of rain, low of +5, high of 7. And lastly, Friday, more rain, a low of +4, a high of 6. So that's this week's weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club and Environment Canada. I am Phil Chang. I am reporting for News 101. Thank you for listening.
Awesome, Phil. Thanks for that in-depth forecast for us there. It's too bad it's going to be a bit rainier, but I guess that's the price we have to pay. It'll be okay, I'm sure. So now we go to a special edition of everyone's favorite opinion editorial segment, Hardball with Iqbal. This week we have a special Dodgeball edition as we're joined with our guest host, Gordon Caddick, and we're going to be talking about student engagement and student politics here at UBC just in preparation for having some of our AMS candidates on. So take it away, guys.
Well, thank Iqbal, you. I mean, this yeah. is what's your read on this so far?
One sec. Personally, whenever this time of year comes around, we always have a Excuse me, sorry about that. During this time of year, almost every election candidate that I see always talks about student engagement, the importance of student engagement, how we need to have more students engaged, how there's always that number thrown out about how many students actually vote every year in the AMS election.
It's like 12%.
Yeah, like something really small. And people say that, and it's an issue every year, and it's a persistent issue that I feel that no one really has a solution for. But I also think, like, is there a solution to it, and do we even need a solution? That 12% of students are voting, think about how big a university is. And imagine what 12% of that student body, like, in just in, like, the real numbers, like, how many people are actually voting?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to get every single person involved. Not everyone's going to care. Like, people live off campus, people... For a variety of reasons. But
some of the AMS issues, they really do affect each and every single student. You know, we talk about U-passes. When we're talking about U-passes, when we're talking about student housing, affordability, you know, everyone should have a say. Everyone should have, you know, their voices heard on these issues, but they clearly just aren't that interested. I mean, from my point of view, I think the problem when AMS candidates talk about student engagement, it's always a kind of condescending, like, mm-hmm. They don't get it because they don't know anything and we have to communicate better to them. But maybe the problem is the AMS's fault. Maybe, like, we're so disillusioned with their capacity to actually affect change that people are just like, well, they don't really represent us.
And I think there's also a lot of the impression that, I mean, everyone finds their niche on campus, and the AMS, instead of being seen as sort of this umbrella that holds all these different niches, is seen as a bit of a niche in itself with a mm-hmm. very politically active student. So, I mean, if you have a student who's very involved with, let's say, their own faculty association or with ski and board or with the dance club or something like that, a different kind of association, I think they would probably see that and being involved with the AMS per se as being mutually exclusive as opposed to seeing one kind of nested within the other.
Yeah, I get what you mean, and I think it's very valid. And actually, this is a bit of an anecdotal thing I'm about to say right now. So today, when I was getting some things printed at Copy Smart, I think, downstairs in the sub, and then I was walking by to the food court. And actually, I was thinking about this segment today because I give it a lot of forethought. And I was thinking to myself, like, what's the, other than, like, fees, other than maybe if I was involved in a club, other than CITR, things like that, like, what is the part of the AMS that affects me on a day-to-day basis? And the thing that, after this internal argument, one thing could come up was, like, the price of pizza at Pyre Squared. Like, that is, like, as a student who's, I'm kind of involved, I'm not super involved, like, throughout CITR, like, I've had my niche, sure, but on a day-to-day actual basis, something that I would notice a change right away is the price of pizza in the sub.
Yeah, but, I mean, you're sitting in a studio that wouldn't have existed without the AMS, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, and I was trying to extrapolate that to maybe students as a whole, right? So I'm a person involved in CITR, so something does affect me, but I think a student, like, if 12% of students vote, right, 100 times 12, that's, like, 88. So that 88% of students, like, what would make them come to the polls? Pizza.
Well, I think it's also because a lot of what the AMS does is not really, like, flashy stuff that's very much in people's faces. I mean, you could say that with government as well. I mean, a lot of the bills and policies that are getting passed aren't things that people are rooting for or looking for in their day-to-day lives. That being said, like, there's definitely a lot that they do behind the scenes that affects everyone. I think the U-Pass is a good example. A lot of the academic stuff that Kieran's been working on this year, things like... like, being the VP finance, everything he does relates to our student fees, right? So, I mean, it's things that the average student may not necessarily feel, but it doesn't at all diminish the importance of what they're doing.
But I would say that in these elections, talk about student engagement, and every candidate is trying to vie into it, they're better at student engagement than anyone else. Mm-hmm. Or, like, they're better at this, better than that. But just me personally, maybe I'm ignorant towards a lot of the actualities of the situation, but between the different presidents that I've been at UBC, between the different VP finances, I can't tell you how one administration, quote unquote, was superior to another on my day-to-day life.
Well, because I think the point that Claire made earlier is really quite a great one about how the AMS is a sort of clique in and of itself. It's a community, right? And so they speak a certain language and they talk to a certain type of person. I mean, like, Iqbal, when you look at AMS candidates' platforms or when you talk to them, do you feel like they're really talking to you, or do you feel like they're talking to sort of an AMS insider?
Yeah.
I think they definitely are, and I think these platform that they have, I'm like, great, like that sounds like a very good idea. Mm. But I'm like, what, at the end of the day, this time next year, how will that idea actually impact me? This time next year when I'm voting for someone else, yeah, how would I look back and say that my vote mattered in X and Y terms?
Yeah. I think on that note, we're going to go to a quick break and get the candidates in here. So we actually were wrong earlier. We're going to have our VP admin candidates first and then our VP academic first. So sorry about that. But this will be very good to continue the talk of student engagement. So do stay with us here on News 101 for the debates between our four candidates for VP admin coming right up.
How come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
On Friday, January 25th, come to Seymour Mountain for the Great Northern Concrete Toboggan Race, an annual event that challenges the creativity, innovation, and technical skills of engineering students from all across Canada. Participating teams must design and construct a toboggan with a metal frame and a running surface made completely out of concrete. For more information, go to gnctr2012.com.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
I'm using the power of the internet to access the World Wide Web on my laptop computer.
Looking for an upgrade? The UBC Bookstore has educationally priced computers and software, including the latest Apple, Lenovo, and more. A huge selection of laptop and tablet accessories competitively priced with the big box stores. Come by and check out the lowest priced Macs in Vancouver. UBC Bookstore, where your purchases support your UBC campus.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
In the year 1963, French artist Robert Filou chose January 17th as Art's birthday and pronounced Art 1 million years old.
On January 17th, CITR celebrates with 24 hours of radio art. That's 24 hours of the weird and the reckless in your ear holes. Tune in to hear radio and sound art, noise and experimental music, and all the strangeness CITR programmers and the Vancouver community has to offer. Guest hosts and artists include Prophecy Sun, Patrick Sampler, Whip the UFO, sound artists Anna Fritz, Julie Gendron, and Emma Hendricks, Giorgio Magnanesi of Vancouver New Music, and more. For schedule updates on all our birthday madness, stay tuned to CITR and like us on Facebook. Happy 1,050th birthday, Art!
And welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Claire Eagle, and we're joined in studio by our four candidates for VP admin for our Alma Mater Society here at UBC, Barnabas Caro, Justin Fernandez, Derek Moore, and Olivia Young. So we're going to be running these debates as we did on Friday, if you were listening, with a brief introduction from each of the candidates and then question and rebuttals from each of them. So without further ado, I guess we'll start with Barnabas. If you can give us 1 minute for your platform.
Sure, yeah. My name is Barnabas Caro, and I'm running for VP Admin. I come from a background, a varied background at UBC, having been involved in lots of clubs, as well as other student groups such as Residence, the AUS, and now currently as a student senator. My platform is based heavily on building community inside of the AMS clubs, as well as with other groups across campus. I've been working closely with Caroline Wong over the last year in two of her areas, student life and the SAC, which is the Student Administrative Commission. The ideas that I have are mostly centered around building community within the classroom in regard to trying to use funds to allow students to have better connections with people in their academics, so as to blend their academics and their social lives, as well as my platform revolves around trying to better communications between the AMS and other groups, as well as trying to open up some of the really large funds that are so far untouched in the student society, and I think really should be used by both students and clubs.
Thanks, Barnabas. Justin?
All right. Thank you, Claire. So my name is Justin Fernandez, and I'm running for VP Administration. I feel I'm the best candidate for this role because I have an extensive involvement experience within student politics. I'm the current Science Undergrad Society Vice President External, and I also sit on the AMS Council as a counselor from science. As part of that role, I have been involved with the new sub for almost the past year, sitting on the committee and getting involved with the project. My platform revolves around three main aspects: strengthening and supporting our clubs, increasing the amount of student involvement with the AMS and across campus, and keeping the new sub on time, on budget, and completely transparent to students as we approach the final year of the project. I feel that my varied experience across campus, not only with student politics, but with groups such as orientations, peer programs, gives me the capabilities required for this role. Please check out my website, www.votegf.ca, for more information about my platform experience. Thank you.
Thanks, Justin. Derek?
Hi, my name is Derek Moore, and I'm currently the new sub-community engagement coordinator at the AMS. Like many other candidates, my platform revolves around the new sub, clubs management, as well as a little policy that I've come to know as anti-siloing that my team and I have put that together. So one of the things, the main thing that I'd like to do when I become VP admin would be to leverage the opening of the new sub as a method by which to build student culture here on campus. I think that the opening of the $103 million building is going to be quite the epic event, and it's a real awesome opportunity to make it into something big and to bond students here on campus. So I've got some plans there. You can check out votederek.ca to check out the platform there. For other things, I've had team management experience on campus here with UBC Orientation as well as with the PVRA. And yeah, check out the platform, votederek.ca, for more information with solid goals and deadlines. Cheers.
Awesome. Thanks, Derek. And Olivia, all to you.
Hi, my name is Olivia Young, and I'm currently the UBC Dance Club president. I have experience as the promotions coordinator for the Student Leadership Conference as well. I think that something that is a little bit different about me is that I haven't held a position in student government on campus, and so that way I can possibly relate to most of the students here at UBC. I believe that one of the things that we need to work on is communication, making sure that students are fully aware of the services and the resources that are available, especially through the AMS. My platform revolves around four things. Number one is clubs management, kind of like my other other candidates. I believe that there's a few things that can be changed, mostly with the funds as well as with SAC. As Dance Club president, I feel like there are things that can be improved on to make things easier for execs and make the membership experience that much better. A couple other things is the Whistler Lodge, making sure that that is a maintained service. And the last thing is the new sub, just continuing with with what the VP admin has been doing so far.
Great. So let's maybe expand on something that you've all talked about in the new sub. I just want to get a sense from you guys, we're kind of going into the end stages of it. What is left for the VP admin to do with the new sub? What could go wrong with a bad VP admin, and what could be improved or could go right? Maybe let's start with, who should we start with? Justin?
The majority of the construction is already complete. The majority of the plans are already complete. So the main role of the VP admin as chair would be to keep the project on task and on budget and to start brainstorming ideas for ensuring that there's a smooth transition from the old sub into the new sub. So I guess the major things that could go wrong is that those logistical things aren't in place. The best practices, HR, management, all those things aren't already in place and aren't already budgeted for. And when the transition happens, everything's a chaos, everything's a mess. And so an appropriate VP admin would be able to take that into account, be really familiar with the project so as to be able to understand the best ways of transitioning and be able to implement that successfully.
I totally agree with Justin. I think that really what we need to think about is the building is almost complete in its design phase. We need to start thinking about who is going to go inside of it. We need to stop thinking about building the building and rather about building the communities which are going to fit within it. I think that some of the big problems that we are going to encounter are disagreements between clubs and student groups about the allocation of space within the new sub, especially in regard to the prominence and advertising of their space, even if it's already been planned where they're going to be. So I think that really part of the large concern of the VP admin this year, as opposed to the VP admin the following year, is not going to be transitioning into the new sub, but rather making everybody feel comfortable and that they have equal representation and they have not been done badly by the AMS in regard to what they get in the new building.
Shifting over to Derek, what do you think could go wrong with the new sub and what could go right?
Yeah, so right now the new sub is like almost completely designed. But that being said, right now like we have, I think, the first slab on. And with the first slab means that we still have the second, third, fourth slabs, as well as we need to do furniture acquisitions and we need to occupy the space, right? And that's a huge commitment. Like there's a ton more work to do. We probably have another $50 million left to spend. How's that money going to be spent? That's what the next VP admin is going to be managing, right? I definitely agree with Barnabas on clubs allocation being an interesting problem that the next VP admin will encounter. Yeah, there's a ton more work to be done, and there's even place for like changes to be made should the students need that. Okay.
I really agree with the point that Barnabas brought up, which is club space allocation. I think that the biggest thing that could go right is for the VP admin to communicate and really try and gain an idea of what all the clubs need and the spaces that they're going to be using. Like, you don't want to put some of the dance groups away from the like dance floor because that just wouldn't make sense. So really just trying to engage the community and make sure that we're representing the voices of the students. What could go wrong, I guess, is if, again, things don't go according to plan, we're behind schedule. So it's a twofold thing. You just need to make sure that everything is on time and that you're really listening to the student body.
Great. So now we now have 30 seconds for each of you to either rebut off of what anyone else has said or to continue to expand on your own points or to pass time if you'd like to. So we'll go in the same order again, starting with Justin.
Perfect. So while I definitely agree that a major thing that needs to be taken into account is club considerations, I feel as if a lot of work has already been done into that. When designing the new sub, groups like the bike kitchen, the resource groups, they've all been contacted and they are all made aware. So a lot of work has already been done to that. And I definitely agree that more work can definitely be done and continue to be done. But I feel like the biggest concern should be trying to advertise the new sub as much as possible, all the different features that are there, and try and make it relevant to students as they enter in, not just
Barnabas.
What I would like to bring up is the fact that I think that there's a lot of attention on the new sub, and I think we still need to remember that throughout our time as admin, we're going to be living and working within the old sub, and there's still a lot of concerns about this building. Who's going to be left inside of it once we move out, and how can we better it? We can't just abandon this building. We're still going to occupy parts of it, and I think it's an important consideration of the VP admin.
Derek?
Yeah, Barnabas, I would agree with you there, but I would make you aware that UBC is actually going to be taking over the majority of this current sub-complex, making it less of a concern of ours. Otherwise, and just to talk to what Justin said there, what Justin is talking about is the specialty clubs. They've been allocated space. These are large UBC-wide clubs that do quite well. Where the real interesting game is going to come is filling up the spaces in the top of the building where normal clubs will be residing.
And just to close out this question, Olivia?
I would just like to say that as president of UBC Dance Club, I have received like no notification about where clubs are going yet, and I know that my treasurer hasn't as well. So I think that that hasn't been addressed yet, and I know that it will be in the next, hopefully in the next year by the new VP admin. Yeah, and I just allocating things as preferred by the student body and what makes sense.
Awesome. So this kind of transitions from where we were at, but we'd like to know, what do you think is the biggest thing that the AMS is currently not doing for its clubs, and how can it improve on this? And this time, let's see, we've started with Barnabas once, we've started with Justin once, so we'll start with Derek this time, and then go around.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I think the AMS can improve on with its clubs is like knowledge transmission between clubs and through the clubs, right? We've had like probably millions of awesome leaders here on UBC campus, right? Let's get their knowledge continuing to flow through the student body who's living here today, right? And not only that, but let's start moving information sideways across club, horizontally. People live on their silos here in campus, and clubs are victim to that too. You're sitting in your silo and you're not transmitting information outwards, right? So the name of the game for the next VP admin when it comes to clubs, I think, is improving training, making training resources available online so clubs can train at any time, and making sure that successful clubs and their executives are transmitting their knowledge outwards.
Olivia?
That was a great response by Derek. One thing I'd like to say is that one of the issues is kind of like a cycle, is that a lot of clubs have financial issues, that we're not getting the resources we need in terms of money. And then that kind of causes competition between clubs. I know that for myself, that on Imagine Day and like clubs days when we're recruiting, it's hard to really try to bond with other groups because we are all fighting for the same members. And we know that commuters can't commit to a billion clubs. It's just not possible. Same with students that live on campus. So I think that, yes, like making sure that knowledge is transferred and that there's inter-club inter-club bonding, but I think that one thing that really needs to be worked on is funds.
Justin?
Yeah, so great points have been made so far. I definitely agree that the things we can definitely work on are professional development for our club executives and digitizing how the Student Administrative Commission works so as to make everything more fluid and easy to understand. For the professional development, there was an initiative thrown out this year to try and give workshops targeted towards specific executives, and it failed. I want to relook at that and see if we can improve that for future years and try and get them to grow as professionally and personally. And then for digitizing the Student Administrative Commission, I feel that a lot can be done in terms of organization and also transition. So if we were to mandate transition reports between all clubs and then keep an internal repository of that information, it would make transition a lot easier.
And Barnabas?
It's tough to go last. I think most of the main points have already been raised. I think funding is a huge issue for clubs, and I think there are massive AMS funds available that are untouched by clubs and students due to the fact that they're not promoted well. That's one of my main campaign platforms. I also agree very, very strongly with Derek. That's another one of my main campaign platforms, is the fact that we need to have cross-club dialogue about how to better do things. We know ourselves in the AMS, we're not the best at running student organizations. And we can see that other groups with much less resources than us excel in different ways. We need to try and get these clubs talking. We need to stop administrating and start trying to facilitating networking and dialogue between these student groups. So I think that these are big, difficult things for the admin to do. They're easy to say, but it's a huge amount of work.
So now we have 30 seconds for rebuttal, and we'll start with Derek, who opened the question.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be totally cordial and agree with my competitors here. It seems like the what we need to do with clubs is pretty clear cut.
Olivia? Yeah, definitely. I really like Justin's point, was that we need to digitize, I think, or modernize the systems that we have for clubs. Another big thing is that we don't have a lot of online systems in place, like online registration and online payments. And I know that as for this year, when I was running the club, it was really difficult to try and get members. So that's a really big thing as well, making sure that there is a place for execs to write transition reports and transfer that knowledge online.
Definitely seems that we're all in agreement about this particular topic. One thing I could add is that I think that some clubs do exceptionally well, and some clubs perhaps can need a bit of work. So I would really be like to look into recognition for the clubs that do really well, and perhaps having an award ceremony or presenting them with awards at an all president's dinner or an all executives dinner or something like that, and organizing that in the future.
I would like to add something that I would like to say to my last little bit. Speaking, I think a really important thing that we can do for clubs is facilitate, by using the old sub, facilitate trying to get people from residency, young people, especially in their first 6 weeks at UBC, to try and get exposed to clubs, not just through Clubs Day, but by taking them around the top of the new sub and doing working with RAs to get programs out there to get young people up into the top of the sub and see things like CITR, stuff like the resource groups, and stuff like the AMS offices.
So you guys have been far too cordial in my mind, so let's throw a little curveball out here. I want each of you guys to speak to some of the weaknesses of your opponents and maybe distinguish yourselves as VP admin candidates. So let's start with, I guess we haven't started with Olivia yet, so how about you open this one?
Oh my goodness. I don't...
How are you different from your other... from your opponents?
Well, I think the biggest thing is I don't know if this would be bashing myself, but I haven't held a AMS government position. Maybe like one thing that could be a little bit different is that because I haven't been exposed to that kind of environment, is that I do have a lot of fresh ideas and kind of like no inhibitions about what I want to do if I was VP admin. So I think that could be something that's a little bit different, but I really don't want to bash my my competitors.
All right, well, next we'll go to Justin, if you want to step up the ante at all here.
I'd just like to say first and foremost that all the candidates for this position are incredibly Kirby talented, and I've looked at all their platforms. They're all well thought out. The reason I would say that I would probably be the best candidate in my opinion, as already mentioned, I have the most student political experience. I have experience on two club executive positions, so I know how that works internally, and I have experience in the new sub. I feel Barnabas focuses too much on student life and not enough on some of the other projects required. And I don't necessarily agree with some of Derek's anti-siloing policies, which is separate, although I do like a lot of the direction that it is going in. And I feel Olivia doesn't have as much experience as me, although they are all.
Barnabas, how are you different?
Thank you, Justin. I would disagree with Justin. Well, first, I would agree with him that we are all very, very... good for the job. I think that I have a lot of AMS experience as well. I feel that there is a lot of focus from the other candidates on the importance of the new sub, and I really think the new sub is a very, very important thing to be done, but I feel that it is very, very much so on its way. We've got a lot of experts working on it. The VP admin role is not supposed to be a construction manager. It's supposed to be the person who deals with student life, clubs, and our building. We just happen to be moving into a new building that doesn't make the role about construction. On the other hand, I do think that people have made some very good points, and I definitely agree with Derek's anti-siloing policy.
Great. And Derek?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to straight up disagree with Barnabas here. Something that's really important for people to know when they go into this election is that the current VP, the VP admin who's going in for this term, will not actually be opening the building. They'll be completing the building, the design, right? With the amount of money that's going into this project, it's really important that the next VP admin is able to leverage the new subcommittee in order to make the changes that students need, right? And to make sure that the like $50 million that are left to spend are going in the right direction, right? Now we have an amazing, we have an amazing opportunity here to leverage this thing as a cultural tool here on campus, right? Furthermore, the VP admin position, it's totally a construction manager position right now. The student engagement portfolio, which is coming up, will be where students are supposed to get.
And so now 30 seconds to rebut or pass if you want.
Why don't we start with Barnabas, because Derek just, and then.
Sure. I would see the VP admin role right now as rather than transitioning into the new building, transitioning into the new portfolio of the VP student life or VP student engagement. I think that so much attention has been put onto building this new building that we are really, really forgetting about other things on campus in regard to how the AMS connects with other groups. And I think that over the last 5 years, this has been symptomatically shown in the fact that we have increasingly poorer and poorer relations with groups such as the resource groups and UBC itself. I think that we really need to get back on focusing to talking to people, and the new sub is important, but we need to look at other things as well.
Derek, let's get you responding now.
I'm gonna hop in there and say, Barnabas, like, can you explain how you're gonna go about doing this using the VP admin position? Can we jump right to him?
Yeah, sure. We'll get 20 seconds of time here.
Okay. Yeah. Firstly, I'd like to say about the about hiring a manager. I don't think that students know best who is best to build a building. If they're gonna do that, that's what the AMS does. It hires a construction firm to do this. They know who's best at operating with them and who works with them as clubs. I would like to address your point and saying how I'm going to reach out to clubs is through.
Olivia, do you want to jump in here?
Or you can cede your time to someone.
Well, I do have something to say. I really do agree that the community part of the new sub is crucial. It's really important that we focus on the people that are going inside the sub. So Barnabas brings up a good point. But the VP admin needs to take a holistic view and really concentrate also on the building, since it's going to be around for an extremely long time. And you really need to consider the structure, the framework of where people are going to be inside.
And last word to Justin.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to agree with Derek and Olivia on this one. The new sub is a $103 million project, and it's not something that we should take lightly. It's been in the works for the last 5 years, and it's in the final year. Lots of things can and might go wrong, and so it's really important to have someone who will be able to hit those concerns as they come up. It's a huge, as Olivia pointed out, it's going to be around for a long time, and it's and student life we can always increase in future years after the new sub is complete.
Awesome. So unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our time, as our candidates for the VP Academic Portfolio are waiting outside to come in. But thank you all very much for coming in and chatting with us today. For all our listeners, make sure you do go and vote online. Check out all their platforms for more information. So once again, those were our candidates for the VP Admin position: Olivia Young, Derek Moore, Barnabas Caro, and Justin Fernandez. So thanks, and stay with us for your VP Academic candidates right after this break.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of
cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow, the clouds big, and we're making it like hell. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it.
All right! Get ready! Here we go again!
Music, reggae music, is tell you, I tell the whole world, you know, telepathically and physically and mentally and spiritually, we are telling them to this music, yeah.
So you heard it here at Rocker Show 101.9 FM CITR, featuring yours truly, George Beard, keeping the reggae music alive on the west coast of Canada. It's all about roots rock, lovers rock, dancehall, reggae music on CITR Rocker Show, Sunday noon to 3 p.m. each and every Sunday. For over 25 years of doing it nice, warm, and easy. Until next time, such time, keep the faith and spread it gently. Ja bless and ja guidance. Ja out. Bless out.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life?
perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV. My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue. Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7:30 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Claire Eagle. I've got my guest host, Gordon Caddick, with me, and I'm joined in studio by the candidates for our Alma Mater Society elections for the VP Academic Portfolio, Kieran Mahal and Montana Hunter. And unfortunately, the third candidate, Anne Kessler, can't be here today as she is sick, but her website is annkessler.ca, I believe. So be sure to check that out as well to hear her views on what we're going to be talking about. So just to open up, we're going to have a brief 30-second intro from each of the candidates on their platforms and who they are. Let's start with Kieran.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me on the show. My name is Kieran Mahal. I'm currently your Vice President Academic in University Affairs, and I'm running for re-election this year. In addition to being on the AMS, I'm also a student senator, and last year I was a Science Undergraduate Society president. I'm running for re-election because this past year we've accomplished a lot on a number of academic issues and also non-academic issues. So for more information, visit my website, kieranmahal.com, but you'll hear more about my platform and things that I'm pushing for this year during the rest of the debate. Thank you.
Great, thank you. My name's Montana Hunter, and I'm also running for VP Academic in University Affairs. I've been involved in a number of different ways on campus, everything from the Senate to the Arts Undergraduate Society and AMS. I've also been quite involved with Model United Nations and a number of different other leadership projects. I want to focus on areas such as affordability, as I think that's a really, really essential issue in the next coming years, and thank you.
Great, so as Kieran, as incumbent, let's shoot the first question to you. Can you speak to our audience about, in your opinion, what has your biggest accomplishment over the past year been?
I think there's a number of things that went really well this year, but I would have to say the Bachelor of International Economics tuition and the way that we were able to lower that tuition and saving students over $500,000 in tuition in this program. I'm proud of it not only because it was a win for students, but it showed that students really can make change if they present well-prepared arguments to the Board of Governors. And it also showed the AMS can work really well with constituency groups and clubs to make things happen for students. So I think that's probably something that I'm very proud of, not only as an AMS exec, but also as a UBC student.
Great. And we're going to ask Montana a little bit of a different question. Montana, can you speak to, in your mind, what has Kieran's biggest failing or weakness been over the past year, and how would you have done it differently?
Certainly. Well, Kieran has definitely been very accomplished in some very specific areas, and all power to her for those accomplishments. From some of the conversations that I've had with people across the campus, they've had some frustration with how the AMS has reached out to them, or rather, not reached out enough to them. That's something that I generally believe that I'm quite effective at doing, is reaching out to various organizations and representing their views as well as the views of the AMS specifically. And I think that is something that could definitely be improved on this year.
Great, Kieran. So 30 seconds for rebuttal to Montana.
I can definitely appreciate that some groups may not feel as engaged as they could be, but I think I've tried my best to engage beyond what other past VP academics have done. I've been the only VP academic in recent years to hold a monthly VP academic caucus in which we engaged constituency VP academics, and that shows in the work that was done on the exam database and also on the midterm evaluations of teaching pilot project, with where we empowered four different VP academics from four different constituencies to take part in a project that really changed the way student evaluations are done on campus. So I think definitely I can reach out more, but I think that I've done as much as I can in my power on the issues that I've worked out to reach out to the relevant groups on campus.
And Montana, 30 seconds to either speak more to what you would do differently, or
certainly. I think Kieran kind of hit the point when she said the issues that she's worked on. She has worked very, very hard on those specific issues, but there's a number of issues that I think that specific constituencies have come to me and said, we could use support on this, or we'd like the attention of the VP academic as well. And it's those areas that I think that the next VP academic should definitely work to focus on.
Great. So our second question is, What is the biggest challenge to the mental health of students, and what can we do to address it? And this time we'll start with Montana.
Certainly. I think exams and the way exams are evaluated and dealt with by the university is a serious, serious challenge. I've talked to a number of people across campus looking at issues like exam hardship and people who've had three exams in just over a 24-hour period and still being forced to take all three. That's not a fair evaluation of a person's ability. We need to address that and need to work with the university to find ways of changing that so they don't get stuck in this kind of horrible situation.
And Kieran, 45 seconds.
So I've talked about this a number of times throughout the campaign, but I think that the biggest thing is the academic environment that we're working under. That includes the academic policies, the way that examinations are done, and all the practices that happen from advising to exam scheduling. And I've made it a point to bring this up in Senate a number of times in many different committees. And I think that the plan that I have in place for a full review of the health of the academic environment of UBC, bringing in key experts from across Canada who've actually implemented changes across the board at different institutions, will go a long way in convincing our Senate and our deans to make some changes in the academic environment. So I would definitely say academic policy and the academic environment as a whole is what is the biggest driver for change for mental health.
Great. And 30 seconds to rebut or to add to what she's already said or you've already said.
In this case, I just want to add to it, as Kieran has definitely made some excellent improvements on mental health on campus. There's some initiatives that I would particularly like to focus on. I think mental health is such an important area. The AMS needs to take a greater focus on it. And the VP Academic Office, which is already overwhelmed by the amount of work that it has to do and the number of different areas that it has, should hire somebody specifically to look at supporting students with mental health. Beyond that, UBC is one of the few universities that doesn't have a yearly mental health report. And I think that this is an initiative that students should engage with and support and talk to the university about implementing.
So let's shift over.
So in response to something that my opponents brought up before, is hiring a mental health and wellness commissioner. I actually created a job description for that this year, and I actually applied for external funding to fund that. In the end, I chose to put that money towards creating a mental health strategic plan for the mental health network of UBC, and also using that money to hire a project assistant to help lobby on those issues that will be coming up for the next fiscal year, and also using that funding to fund the upcoming mental health symposium. So quick plug, this Saturday, mental health symposium, go to blogs.uc.ca/mental health network to sign up for the mental health symposium.
Great, so now it's actually time for the next question, and I want to shift over to the issue of land use. There have been a series of high-profile land disputes between the AMS and UBC, for example, Gage South, and before that, the UBC Farm. Hypothetically, if the university were to try to push through another development that did not serve the interests of students, how would you go about responding? And we'll start with Kieran with this one.
Okay, I have two words, Acadia Park. That's the next upcoming issue on land use, for sure. It's something that my office brought forward to AMS Council and to the university a few months ago when we realized what was happening with the redevelopment process and the fact that Acadia Park, a large chunk of it had been rezoned without any needs assessment being conducted. So this year we are planning a needs assessment in partnership with two courses, having UBC students on the ground doing research about what makes this community socially sustainable and putting that forward in an airtight argument that the Board of Governors can't turn down, that we need to reevaluate the designation of Acadia Park.
Montana?
Great. I believe you were specifically asking, what is the best way of representing to the university or how standing up to them effectively? I would say it's proving to the university that what is good for students is good for them as well in the end. And being able to present that in a clear and effective way is generally what I find will convince the university to back down and follow students' interests.
And so we'll have 30 seconds for rebuttal, starting with Kieran. Or you can add anything to what you previously said.
Definitely. Montana is right in that you have to prove to the university that what's in the best interest of students is in the best interest of them, but you have to be able to effectively communicate what that best interest is and put it in language that the university will understand, and that's what I'm doing with its needs assessment. It's just providing real concrete research and data that can't be disputed, and I think that's very important, and it worked in the BIE process, and I think it'll work again if we can really work together with the students in Acadia Park.
And Montana, to close this question out, do you have anything to add?
I think on this one they've actually covered it quite well.
Great. So our next question, with the advent of a lot of new educational technology like online courses and free online learning opportunities, how do you see this transforming the classroom experience and what role do you think the AMS is going to play in this? Starting with Montana this time.
Certainly. I think the AMS needs to work with the university to provide as effective a statement of what students' interests are in this case. Because often the university, to use the term broadly, is sort of on a cloud floating above the rest of the above students. They don't necessarily know what affects students or what students want. So we need to be a voice to them, whether it's in committees, whether it's in specific institutes and presenting our views there, whether it's writing reports on the use of MOOCs or other online educational devices, or even kind of looking at lecture capture, thank you, Gordon, and how we can implement that effectively in classrooms.
Kieran?
I think this is an issue that is going to be a big one over the coming few years, because the university can't just dive into everything. We have to really have a strategy about what we're going to do so this university can make it through the next revolution in education. And I think the university is in the right track with the new flexible learning initiative that they're doing. They're trying to really engage students and faculty members to find out what needs to be done in terms of flexible learning. On the note of technologies that should be available right now, I think we need to have lecture recording and we need to have lectures available online now. Most universities have already done this. I wrote a report that debunked a lot of the myths that faculty members had around lecture capture that's been talked about in the Senate Teaching and Learning Committee, and I'm confident that we can continue to push this forward. And with the new online learning that's happening, lecture capture will be pushed even further over the coming years, and I think it'll be a priority of Senate this year.
And back to Montana.
To add that I think one of the most effective ways of the AMS in encouraging effective new and exciting learning technology is working with the specific student societies under the faculties. Faculties have very, very specific needs that often differ completely from what each other, and they're often the most effective ways of lobbying the university or their faculties as well. So I think the AMS really needs to look at supporting them to create effective learning solutions for them.
And Kieran, to close it off.
Yep, I would like to say that that's something the AMS is already doing. When we did do demo sessions for picking the lecture capture software that would be recommended to the university for purchase, all of the VP academics and all the undergrad societies were invited to participate and give their feedback, and many of them did. And so they were heavily consulted in the selection of the lecture capture software for the university.
Okay, so I think that will be our last question, as we do want to give you time to do a 30-second closing. But I guess I just have one more quick question that we've wanted to ask all of our candidates, and we haven't because we've always run out of time. But I just want to know, for each of you, would you rather fight a duck-sized horse or a horse-sized duck? Kieran?
A duck-sized horse. Do you want an explanation?
Yeah. Or, no, sorry, 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck. Sorry, that changes a little bit.
Yeah, that definitely changes it. A horse-sized duck, I think.
Okay. And Montana?
I have to agree with Kieran there. One horse-sized duck. Just imagine being swarmed by 100 little small creatures like that. There'd be nothing you could do. It'd be terrifying.
But I think a duck-sized horse would be really cute. So.
Okay, so on that note, we'll give you 30 seconds each to just round out your platform once again or say anything that you might have wanted to say and didn't have time to say. Starting with Kieran again, I believe.
Sure. So again, my name is Kieran Mahal. I'm your current VP Academic and University Affairs, running for re-election. For more information, visit my website, kieranmahal.com. I just want to say that I think the other candidates running in this election are phenomenal. But I think the difference is that with me, you have a student running who has 4 years of experience in student government and also in student services. I have real results. I've actually delivered on things that I've promised to do as Science Undergraduate Society President, as a student senator, and as VP Academic. So behind my platform is real action, and I really hope that you'll see that, and please vote for me. Kieran Mahal for VP Academic.
Awesome. And Montana?
Fantastic. Thank you. So again, my name is Montana Hunter. I think the AMS really needs to focus on affordability given the high cost of education, and we as a student society really need to put that first and foremost among the other issues that we're playing with right now. I hope that whoever is elected to this position makes a point of focusing on that. The AMS has made some really, really exciting accomplishments in the last year, but it's not enough. There's a whole other area of that we need to focus on, including, once again, affordability and reaching out to societies more effectively. You can find more information on my platform at votemontanahunter.com. Thank you.
Awesome. So that brings our show for today to a close. Thanks again for all the candidates who came in, both for VP Academic and VP Admin. Once again, you just heard our VP Academic candidates in studio, Kieran Mahal, Montana Hunter, and Kessler is not available as she is sick. But you can check out her website at annkessler.ca. So, thank you. And so that's our show for today, Monday, January 21st. Today's show was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. To help out or to help us write headlines or to give us an important news tip, you can contact us through our email at news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us on Friday at 5 for another edition of News 101. I'm Claire Eagle. Today was also guest hosted by Gordon Caddick and produced by Iqbal Ahmed. So from the entire news team here at CITR, thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next show right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.